welcome to the Car, Sim and Race Driver Show, presented by Hugh Hattrick. Drive fast and try not to crash. Good morning and welcome to the Car, Sim and Race Driver Show with a very special guest today. And I always say that I'm very, very excited about my guests that come on the show. But today is a really special day. I've been looking forward to this for ages because we have none other than Josh Martin. Josh, it's great to have you on the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, thank you, Hugh. Thank you for having me so much.
Oh, you're very welcome. Now, for people who are out there who are kind of following sim driving and sim racing, you may well be familiar with Josh because you travel the world with Formula One, setting up the eSports with Formula One. How on earth did that all start? It sounds like a dream job.
Yeah, it's a very good job. I'm very lucky to do it. So kind of growing up, I've always had an interest in sim racing and eSports. I did a lot of racing myself as a sim racer. And then coming out of university, I had a friend who was actually working at the company at the time. And he said, you know, we've got position. Do you want to apply? See what it is we do. So over the next sort of few weeks and months, I applied to the company, got a job. And ultimately, it's translated into my current role as an esports producer. So what that really means is if there's things like F1 esports, the live broadcasts, or any kind of esports competition that the company facilitates, I'm involved with the setup, the competition rule sets, right through to seeing the events run. So it's really good fun. And yeah, like you say, it lets me travel all over the world.
That's fantastic. And so what kind of degree did you do to kind of get involved with that? Or was it completely unrelated?
It was quite unrelated. I won't lie. I did a psychology degree at the University of Dundee. Kind of came out of university, realized it wasn't really what I wanted to do. And I'd always had that interest in motorsports. So it was more of a natural transition in that regard, I think.
So did you find that because you had that degree that helped you to get the job, do you think? Were they looking for graduates as such? Or do you think it was just your passion for the sport that helped you get in the door of this kind of motorsport arena?
I think it's probably the passion. I mean, you know yourself, you've obviously interviewed a wide range of people on this podcast. And I think the one thing we all share in common is that passion for the sport, yourself included. And I think once you get into that motorsport family, it's very easy to move around within the atmosphere. So I was very fortunate I was able to get in the door there, and that kind of opened up further opportunities down the line.
Yeah. And so now, I mean, I've seen a few of the F1 esports when they've had the big championships on, and they do look spectacular. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like going into like a not like a game show, but, you know, you see all this incredible equipment, and then they're all in there. And I think what is amazing is that the drivers, when they come on, they've got the boots, you know, they've got they've even got the racing boots or the racing shoes. They've got even gloves and everything. You know, all you need is now is a what do you call it? You know, the balaclava and the helmet, you know, and they'd be just about there. But they take it so seriously. Some people say that they wear the gloves because their hands sweat, isn't it? If they don't wear them, and if they wear the gloves, it kind of helps to stop that. But I mean, it really is as near to reality as you can get.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the F1 esports broadcast, which is kind of is shown on obviously online, but as well as on Sky Sports F1 and broadcast. It's basically set up within a cinema. So it's a very high scale production. There's a high level quality of, you know, guests on the show. Obviously, the drivers are amazing as well. And like you say, it's quite scary to see, even in the preparation of the teams, how that transitions from real F1 to the simulator role. So obviously I'm not going to say specific teams, but there's certain teams are much more prepared than others, shall we say. And it's like you say, that gap is getting closer and closer between real and virtual, and it's gonna be really exciting to see where that crossover point is.
So how do you find, because I mean there's a lot of different drivers that obviously compete, how do they get started? Because a lot of people who watch this show, you know, they're kind of fanatics about sim racing. They play a lot of things like Gran Turismo and those kind of games, Assetto Corsa, and obviously the Formula One as well. But they think, how on earth could I get onto that stage? You know, what do you have to do to get into a Formula One esports championship event?
Yeah, I think it's it can be quite complicated and look quite confusing and almost scary, I guess, if you don't know really what's going on. F1's usually the easiest example just because as a game, it's the most popular. But if you go into F1esports.com, for example, they've got a full breakdown of kind of how you get into it. And what that really means is it starts off as, whether it's Gran Turismo or a set of course, whatever it is you play, start off by learning the basics of racecraft, much like you would in the real world. Get into some organized competitive leagues online, race against other people, see where you stack. take the time to learn about cars, setups, and racecraft, I guess, in general. And then ultimately they'll have like sort of time trial qualifying competitions, which will rank you. And eventually you get put into the pro draft, which in F1 is a 40 man event. And the teams will pick players out of a seated area to say, right, you're going to race for our team. Wow. And it's really exciting. It's a really emotional time for the drivers because you see some really talented guys like at Ferrari, for example. And then there's obviously the ones that don't quite make it, and there's the tears and stuff from that. But there's been a lot of Scottish drivers that have done very well in the series. And I guess that basically all I can say, just practice, practice, and practice.
Yeah, because I remember I used to have great fun driving the old F1 games, and you try and do time trial. And I was always about 3 or 4 seconds off the really good times, you know, and I could never figure out. I'm sure I was throwing my controller a few times at the TV. You know, I think, how on earth did they do it? They must be cutting the corners or cheating. And then, so I would go on a kind of rampant kind of lot to say as to what happened. But no, I mean, the guys that do it are just so good, because I think in with Formula One as well, it's not just a matter of turning up and driving or even on the game. You have to be able to know the setup, isn't it? Because the setups do make quite a big difference. And I remember going onto a lobby on the Formula One from, I think it was like 2016 or thereabouts. And I had no idea at all about the setup. I mean, I know you can lighten things up, you can change tire pressures and things, but I met one of the guys online who thought, try these settings. So I kind of blindly went in to try and put those settings on. And it did actually improve quite a bit. The car wasn't quite as fidgety, or you know, it reacted better as you went around the bends, and so my times came down. But it's so there's a lot more to it than just driving. So from your point of view, because you've done a lot of sim driving yourself, how did you get on in racing, and how did you kind of start? How did you find it getting in? Was it the Formula One game that really inspired you, or you played a lot of, or was it others as well?
Yeah, so I started off on F1 2010. That was my first one, and like yourself, kind of went in a bit blind, kind of just thought, you know, this is good fun, this is nice, and you know, I was relatively fast, so it was fine. And then Formula One 2013 was my next one that I kind of took a bit more seriously. And the gap there, like you say, between those who are fast and those who are very fast, isn't all down to setup. Admittedly, there's a bit of natural driving talent, but a lot of it was setup. And I basically had to learn, and this is kind of where I guess if I'd done a motorsport degree or an engineering degree, it would have came in useful. But I had to learn, you know, the importance of tire pressures, of cambers, all this kind of stuff. And I think it's amazing to see the technical knowledge that these sim racers have. You know, it's quite scary to see when they do get the opportunity to sit in a real car, the amount of feedback they can provide and the amount of accurate feedback. I know you had David Perrell on recently, and I think he's a textbook example because he obviously had a lot of experience in Gran Turismo, and now he's coaching sim drivers. So I've been very fortunate in that regard to kind of have his help and support. And I think you'd agree that the technical knowledge is just on another level.
Yeah, because I think it has to be there, isn't it? Because I think the guys that do the top end sim racing, I think their eventual hope is they might get employed by a Formula One team and be their test driver on the sim style on their simulators and things. And if you don't have the knowledge of how the setup works, you're going to be in big trouble. You can't get away from that now. I think in the old days you probably could. I remember seeing like you know Formula One from the 80s and the 90s, and in those days I remember listening to Ron Dennis, and everyone thought that Ayrton Senna had this great knowledge of setup, but similarly, it wasn't the case. He could describe what he needed and how to get it done. Mm-hmm. And if you had really good engineers, they would then transform that into getting the car working as to how he wanted. And this was the big surprise, because I think people like Prost, and they knew more on the engineering side, but they were also very consistent. But Senna was quite different, just that incredible natural talent that could just kind of beat anyone, you know. I think nowadays you have to be good. You really have to know what you're doing with the setup. And that, for me, that's like, oh, goodness me, it's like going back to school, you know, trying to work out how to make it all happen. How do you find, I mean, obviously, did you, because obviously you were competing in championships as well, did you get to those, you know, you obviously get into the top tiers. What was it like actually competing in those kind of championships?
Yeah, so this last year in 2019, I was fortunate enough, I competed in the Assetto Corsa Competizione SRO Esports Series. We basically followed the Blancpain GT calendar to 6 different rounds, and there was, you know, an online qualifying element, there was invited teams, and then there was an on-site qualification. So I went through a lot of the on-site qualification, and just the amount of focus and determination that you need to have is it's unlike anything else. I think when you take people and put them in a live venue, whether it's at Monza, for example, or even F1 Esports in London, it's because you're not in your home environment, you're kind of taking out your comfort zone a wee bit, which works well. Yeah. Because it allows, I mean, it's how real race drivers are. No 2 weeks are the same for them. And so for me, it was, I still remember at Monza going wheel to wheel with drivers who were normally faster than me, but being able to go wheel to wheel with them in Monza was, it was something I'll never forget. And I think it gave me the reassurance and the confidence to keep pushing forward that actually, you know what, this is something that I want to do. And so then when I went to Paul Ricard and the Nürburgring, it was just a continuation of that. So I think anyone who gets the opportunity should take it up, definitely. And those who are working towards it, don't stop either.
Yeah, because I think when you know you're fast enough, when you know that you can compete well with them, it makes a huge difference, because you think, no, I can do well with this. I can come up at the top and compete and show them what we can do, you know. So it's definitely great to get that competitive spirit, and it's great to see Formula One and these other games as well coming up and managing it. Because we've watched a bit of the Gran Turismo World Championships, and they put a huge amount into it. And when I spoke to a Super GT or Steve Alvarez Brown a few weeks back, you know, I mean, he's been all over the world. He's been to New York and celebrating with the creator of Gran Turismo, which, you know, it's amazing when you think that, you know, what games have done. And what's quite funny is that there's now a generation of people like myself who have come up with these games. And, you know, obviously I've not gone into it in that way, but they, you know, these who have done so well and have been able to, you know, probably achieve their dreams on a console, when you think that's where it started, and now they're on TV and or they have big social media amounts of huge followings, and it's quite a thing. How do you see it developing in terms of esports, especially with Formula One, because it really is, it's so huge?
Yeah, so I think it's the best way to kind of see how it's developing is from looking at the drivers themselves, and I don't mean necessarily in terms of raw pace, but if I look at F1 Esports, for example, when it first started, it didn't have the official teams backing, and now it's got the teams involved. And what you're seeing is a lot of the drivers are getting tuition and coaching from team personnel from the F1 team. They're getting the support from the engineers on the technical side. And really, it's becoming an all-round package, to the point where these people who've grown up playing video games are now integral members of an F1 team, and they're competing for $500,000, which is, you know, a scary amount of money. And I think moving forward, that link is only going to become more and more important. I think Rudy Van Buren, I believe, actually at McLaren, won the world's fastest gamer competition, which was on Fan Games, and is now doing test work for McLaren. So obviously there's some element of transition there, and I think that's evidence to where the market's going. So I hope we see more competitions like F1 and the Gran Turismo stuff. I hope we see more money coming into it, and I hope we see more of the real teams leaning into it as well. F1's taken a huge gamble and it's paid off, so hopefully that gives the confidence to the Blancpain teams or even the British touring car teams right through the
grass. Yeah, that would be amazing. Touring cars would be great fun. but I know that's the thing. I mean, it is fantastic watching them and seeing them come on. And if you're saying now that if you really do well in sim racing, there's a potential they could take you on for the actual real driving team, that would be something else. Because that must be the ultimate dream of so many people like myself, who play the games, and they think, oh yeah, it'd be amazing to drive a real car, a real racing car, but to actually do it and to be competitive, that is an amazing thing. And I think also it helps to connect the current generation with Formula One or with the different sports, because it has had that difficulty, I think, you know, in getting new generations come in, because it's quite expensive to go to a Grand Prix or go to the, you know, it's not the easiest thing you can do, but it's well worth it to go and see a Grand Prix or go and see the kind of motor racing that's on out there. In fact, the main Grand Prix that the only one I've ever been to, although I've watched them avidly for years, was the 1993 European Grand Prix at Donington. And I saw Ayrton Senna win in those incredible conditions. And it was my 18th birthday, you see. So it was a birthday present. And it was something else. But it's the noise and the atmosphere and the whole thing. How do you find, because the games and the big championships that go on, do they run at the same time as the races? Because I've heard now there's simulator events on at the racetracks when the Grand Prix is going on.
Yeah, so F1, for example, runs... I believe the week after. So if you say you took the first Grand Prix, which is your Thursday to Sunday, from that Monday to Wednesday would be the F1 Esports. Blancpain, at Paul Ricard, for example, it was the 1,000 kilometers of Paul Ricard, whatever the case is. We started our sim race, which lasted 2 hours. And as we finished, the winners of that race joined the real race winners on the podium. So there was that link.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And that was an incredible experience. Of course, I wasn't on the podium, but to see those guys go up there and to have that recognition from the motorsport community was incredible. So we're slowly seeing that kind of assimilation occur. And I think hopefully, well, I don't know. I don't know what your thoughts are, but I don't think I'd want to watch a simulator race over an F1 race. I think I'd rather watch the F1 race.
Yes, the real race is great. I suppose if you're in the pits or you're in the area where it's on, it's quite exciting to watch because you see all these people, you know, going away at the steering wheels and you think, oh, this, where's the cockpit's gone? You know, and it's kind of, it looks dramatic. I remember watching one with Chris Hay when he was doing the commentary, I think, at the one at Monza. I think that was a GT Blanc Pain one. In fact, it may have been your good self that was there with him. And I remember that was one of my first analytical looking at that kind of racing, and I thought, wow, this is fantastic, because you're literally on the pit lane, you know, and the cars are going past outside and you've got this incredible event inside. I mean, for people starting out, I mean, I've got like a basic play seat challenge and a Logitech G29, and I found that to be really, really good. In fact, one of my friends just gone and bought one on my recommendation. I think that's probably the first step, really, isn't it? Something like that to get yourself a steering wheel and a seat if you really want to immerse yourself a bit more into gaming. And then, of course, it goes up. Now, you obviously know the really high-end stuff. What's the best stuff out there? What do you think really makes the most of sim racing?
Yeah, I think it's very much dependent on your price point. I think, I know that's a bit of a cop-out answer, but, you know, I know guys that have spent tens of thousands of pounds. I know guys that have spent hundreds of pounds, and some are as fast as each other. So for me, I started off with Thrustmaster with the TX wheel. Still using Thrustmaster to this day. But even like the Logitech stuff, I think as long as you can get comfortable with it and you can understand the equipment, that makes all the difference, because even, you know, it's easy to get lost in talking about car setups, but the amount of settings you can change on these wheels now is insane. And F1 Esports, watching Brendan Lee, for example, he basically had one eye on the steering wheel and one eye on the track because he was constantly making all these adjustments and stuff. And ultimately that, you know, led him to his championship win and whatnot. So I think get comfortable with your equipment first. And then if you want to start spending money on like direct drive and load cell pedals, obviously that's going to benefit you, but it's not the be all and end all.
Yeah, one of my friends just says, "What can I get for 25 quid?" I said, "Well,
probably 25 bottles of your favourite wine, I guess. I don't know."
Yeah, that might be a better idea, I think. But yeah, no, that's the thing. But I mean, I think it's amazing because like my setup here costs about £300, and I thought that's quite a good entry point to get yourself into that. And the G29 wheel is quite good. And I have to say, I haven't fiddled around with so much of the settings on it. But if there was a setting that you think would make a big difference, what would that be? Because obviously you've got like force feedback. Is that something that is worth? I think mine's on like setting 6 for Gran Turismo, but do you have an idea of what might be a game changer or something that might help people who are using that kind of setup?
Yeah, so I think with force feedback, for example, so the Fanatec Rider direct drive wheel, which produces up to, I think, 30 newton meters of torque, which is obviously absurd amount. And in general, people have a tendency to crank everything up to max because they're like, more force feedback must equal better. But the issue you get if you turn it up too much is it kind of starts to, dampen is maybe the right word, where it overproduces the forces and you lose actually a bit of feeling. So you almost want to dial it back. For example, my Thrustmaster TSPC, I run it 75%. The idea is that way it gives me enough of the sensation with the tires and the curbs, but it's not oversaturating the forces. And I think with anyone who's making any adjustments to their wheel, take the time to learn from the manufacturer's website what that setting actually is. Fanatec, to be fair, credit where it's due, are really good at explaining that. But whether you use the Thrustmaster stuff, Logitech, whatever the case may be, kind of sit down, read through it, and just play about with it. Ultimately, you can reset all this stuff and just see what works. I guess it's kind of like if you had a race car and you're changing little bits of your setup, see what works, what doesn't, dial it back, dial it forwards, and then eventually you'll get comfortable.
So in other words, we've got to read the instructions. The thing that no man ever wants to do, forget the instructions, he throws it out and And that's the thing, isn't it? I remember I was so excited the day I got mine that it took me, I was on a lunch break and it took me 20 minutes to build the whole thing. And I was just so desperate to put it together. I'm sure I didn't put all the Velcro on the right bits. I thought, I'm amazed this seat's going to actually stand my weight when I sit on it. Otherwise, I'll just go clunching onto the ground. But but no, it's so fantastic. I mean, I have to say, just from the one I've got, it does give you so much more feel just for what it's like. But one of the questions I've got as well is, for people who are starting out, how do they get quicker? Because, you know, they might find that they're doing these laps perhaps on Gran Turismo or on F1. What would you say is the most common fault that slows people down or ruins their lap times compared to the guys who are pretty good at the game?
I think a combination of kind of overcomplicating it and overdriving the car, if that makes sense. I think if you look, so when I'm learning, you know, new tracks and whatnot, I actually watch real F1 footage. So I watch a lot of like Alonso's on board, not that he races anymore, but because as a driver, I think you'd kind of agree. And maybe Senna was the same. They're very smooth and methodical in the driving. There was no rapid movements or anything like that. Yeah. And, you know, being nice and smooth is what will gain you the lap time, because you're not scrubbing the tires, you're not losing speed. And I think there's so much you can do before you actually get onto the track. Even when you get onto the circuit, for example, first couple of laps, do it 50% race pace. Notice any features for brake markers, for turning points, or anything like that. And then slowly build it up and build it up. Like I said, David Perrell's done a lot of coaching with me, and I really appreciate the kind of tuition he's given me. And it's been a lot around making sure you're relaxed and stuff that actually, as a sim racer, I wouldn't have considered, but is actually very important, because it's stuff he'd learned in the real car. So even your seating position. So for anyone who's trying to get faster, make sure you're comfortable, build it up slowly, and then push the limits and work your way back.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's the thing. We've got good friends of mine in Leeds that run SimTrack, is really the premier driving centre, kind of simulator centre in Leeds and in the north. And it's very, very good. We went down there a few months back and we had to go, and we had James Kellett, who was Lando Norris's former teammate at Ginetta. He's fantastic. I hope to have him on the show sometime soon. But and he was, you know, so he goes alongside you in the Ginetta simulator car. And it's amazing because exactly the reel is the same thing. Apart from having seatbelts, you're literally in there. And it's fantastic fun. The noise is amazing. It's got this huge screen. And you're able to you know, obviously go into the corners. He watches what you do. And then he says, right, you need to, you know, brake harder here and then turn in and smooth. So it's, I think, for people who are kind of wanting to take their sim racing pretty seriously, we talked a little bit about, you've been taught by David Perrell as well. Those kind of things are very, very useful, aren't they? I think that's probably the make or break for a lot of people to help them move forward.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's other people apart from David you can go to. Like I say, you could even just watch onboards. But I think the sim racing community can be at times really beneficial. And I think if you spend time racing online, you'll make friends. You know, the amount of people that you spoke to on this podcast, for example, I think everyone will hopefully have been quite friendly. And everyone's willing to share tips, you know?
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people have said to me, because that's one of the main questions I ask of my guests, of, you know, how do you get faster? And some people, one of the quite interesting ones that I found out recently was, you know, on Gran Turismo, they have the circuit experience. And of course, I forgot that when they do that, when you go onto the circuit experience, they split up the track to about three or four different sections. And it means that if you're struggling, for example, it was the hairpin at Japan, and the guy, it was Rory from Iris, and he couldn't get the hairpin right. So he went on to the circuit experience and he did he just did it time and time again, because it's about a 15 second section, until he got it right. And of course that allowed him to do much better and to go up the ranks on Gran Turismo. So I think there's a lot of really good stuff in there that if people are serious about the game, they go in there and practice every section until you're getting it right. That how do you think, you know, because recently Lewis Hamilton was in a big Gran Turismo. He's obviously signed over for Gran Turismo. Do you see more of that happening with the Formula One drivers kind of doing more with esports, or being kind of ambassadors for esports and things like that?
Yeah, I think so. I think looking specifically at F1, for example, Lando Norris works really closely with the McLaren esports team, McLaren Shadow. And obviously, you know, he's got a huge simulator set up at home and he's a big fan of it. If you look towards iRacing, you've got the likes of Max Verstappen, Lando Norris, Daniel Juncadella, all these guys who are real drivers using the simulator now to give them extra practice. And it's quite entertaining to watch them, but it's also really educational to watch them as well. And I think particularly, you know, whether it's a Formula car they're driving or even a GT car, there's little habits in their driving style that you can learn. And I think Max said that last year at Spa, that he practiced some of his overtakes on the simulator before trying them out for real. So I hope we see more of the drivers coming over.
Yeah, that's amazing, actually. Now, I've got a quick question for you for one of our viewers. It says here, I find I have to be too aggressive to stay in the fight. Once I'm ahead, it's okay. But if I try and race using my right lines, I get taken out. Is it just practicing and getting clear of the field that will ultimately help me?
That's a good question. I think, you know, we see it all the time in real racing, you know, with touring cars, for example, push to pass, where they just come straight up the inside of drivers and whatnot. I think, you know, it's all fine and well sticking to your lines, but you do need to be able to adapt to coming off the racing line. So practice race start after race start after race start with the AI, because if the computer can be quite unpredictable at times, which is actually a benefit. And then when it comes to actual racing, if you feel that you're overdriving the car and you're on the limit, a certain element of that is beneficial, and I'm sure you'd agree that's kind of where you want to be, is on that edge. But when it gets, if you feel that you're starting to struggle and the car's getting away from you, then just scale it back. You know, the race isn't won in the first corner, and ultimately you're better finishing in second place than you are putting the car on the wall. A lot of people might not necessarily agree with that, but I think there's been races where I've kind of had to just ease off a little bit to make sure I maintain that second place over the win, and it's paid off in the long run, because championships can be quite long.
Yeah, yeah. I think one of my friends is basically starting up at the lower end of Gran Turismo, and it is kind of crazy, because unless you get a really good lap time, it's manic, and obviously another penalty system has changed quite recently to make it slightly better, but it just means that people can ram you and get away with it, so you have to be kind of quite aware of what you're doing. I know that Super GT, he has the radar on all the time, and you can see people trying to do moves just because it's him. So he kind of clears away a hairpin and watches them go past, and then he carries on. It can be absolutely crazy. Yeah. But I have to say, watching his videos has been really, really good, because when he does his live streams, you can learn his lines a bit more, and you can see where he's braking, what gear he's going in, and all of that. And I think that is quite good. But it's fantastic just to see where it's all going. I mean, what would be your ideal if you had, you know, in terms of your job and the kind of productions that you're doing, what would be the kind of series that you would like to see, you know, going into more sim racing against real racing?
It's quite a tricky one, because at the moment we've got everything from rally to IndyCar through to NASCAR, and, you know, then obviously Volcan and F1. But I think for me, I'd like to see a lot more of the grassroots stuff. I think in terms of particularly looking at like motor clubs in Scotland or even in the UK, I think there's a huge gap in terms of memberships. You know, we should be looking towards where people can race during the normal racing season in a real car. And then in the off season, have a virtual championship. You know, not only does that give more value to the club members, but it also brings together the sim racers with the real racers, and ultimately means we could see just more racing going on. And I think it shouldn't be undervalued, grassroots motorsport. I think, I'm sure you'll agree, some of my fondest memories or some of my favorite memories are going to Knock Hill to watch the, you know, the legends or whatever the case may be.
Aye. Yeah, no, it's great fun. I mean, I remember watching autocross when I was in my younger teens, and it was great fun, literally people turning up with an old Mini and an old Banger, and they drive away in a field, and we thought, I would love to have a go in something like that. And I think that kind of, that, because that encourages you to have a go. And obviously with sim racing, you can buy yourself a PC or a PlayStation or whatever, and you've got a fairly easy entry into that kind of thing. But I think, well, it's been fantastic to get your advice. One of our viewers says, thanks, Josh. I'll practice using AI. So that's the thing for definitely doing the starts. Because, of course, you can turn up the AI to like 100%. So, therefore, it's as tough as it can be. And that gives you a much better idea of how to do a good start. But to see how people are kind of evolving at the game and how it's getting better and better. And hopefully we hope to have a simulator centre in Duns, where I am. That's where I'm, my kind of long-term goal is to be working on that. Because we've got the Jim Clark Motorsport Museum up here in Duns. And they've got a Lotus 49 simulator in that, which is great fun. But also it's to kind of keep that motorsport heritage going and build it into the new generation. So hopefully we'll be getting that all sorted out, and I'll be speaking to you very soon about all of that. In terms of what would you say is, you know, obviously it's very hard for people to go to these kind of championships, but are there other simulator centres that you know about where people can go in and experience that kind of atmosphere and having a go at sim racing?
Yeah, there's quite a few. I think what I generally say is look towards your local racetrack. I know a lot of those will have some form. You do have purpose-built centres such as Simply Race in Milton Keynes, but you can look towards ones at like Donington, or I think Knockhill are actually planning something. I don't know if I can say that, but I think they were planning something.
Right. Breaking news. That's always good.
I don't know if it's that though. but then... Yeah, I think look towards your local racetrack and there should be some stuff going on. If not, just fire up your PlayStation and there's bound to be people. Esports Scotland are doing a lot of work at the moment. We're planning some really exciting stuff in Scotland.
Fantastic.
And I'm sure that the British Esports Association will be planning stuff soon as well. So
yeah. Is there a way that we can get involved? Obviously, we're in Scotland from this show. It'd be great to get some links maybe, or just an idea of how you can get involved with that kind of thing. If there's anything going on that you know about that can encourage our viewers as well to have a go with that, because we're quite a good Scottish contingent who would love to be, I'm sure, you know, more involved and be able to take part in these kind of events. But now, just before we go, you helped with the setup at Mercedes World, didn't you? Up at
Mercedes World, yes, yeah.
Yes. Now, what was that like? Because I've seen your video with Chris Hay, which is excellent. I'll try and put a link in that to encourage our viewers to watch that one as well. Because it looked spectacular how you've set that up. I mean, what kind of equipment and things like that was used to make that happen?
Yeah. So. We worked very closely with PlaySeat and Fantech on that. What we've basically got is it's a 12 simulator setup for anyone who hasn't seen it. Six of them running a F1 PlaySeat, so in the Formula style that you see in F1 Esports, which is also using the F1 game. And then we've got six PlaySeat Sensations, which are basically GT style seats. They run Project Cars 2. And then beside that, we've also got our motion simulator, the VR5, which we build in-house. And that was a really cool setup. Obviously, it's down at Weybridge. It's surrounded by the old Brooklyn Circuit. So you've got the old bank and around the outside. And that was a really cool opportunity to work with a manufacturer in terms of building a friendly but competitive customer experience. And it's something that we're kind of scaling up throughout the rest of this year. It's kind of corporate bookings as well. So for people to come down and compete. And we've also done a simulator install at Williams F1 Conference Center as well, which is a very similar setup. So I think what we're seeing now is we're kind of seeing a bit of growth into the commercial market, which is cool because I love the simulator and I love being able to jump on one. The more venues we've got with that, it's great. And the equipment is just, it's good quality stuff, but pretty simple. It's the Fanatec CSL series with, like I say, the play seats and PCs. So that's kind of what we're running there.
Yeah. Oh, that looks great. And I think the ones I saw on that show, they had smaller simulators so that younger children could get on them. Was that the case?
Yeah. That's correct. Yeah. We used some 80/20 aluminium framing, which is actually becoming more and more popular as a simulator construction choice. And we basically took go-kart seats, mounted them onto these frames, and again, used the Fanatec equipment and basically built simulators for kids anywhere up to 5 years old. And seats and stuff so that they can obviously adjust it. And that was really cool, and it's proved really popular as well. So,
because I've got a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old, and they don't fit on my playseat, even with 100 cushions and everything else. It doesn't quite work. They have to sit on my knee and they can't reach the pedals. So it's interesting to see that there's maybe a scope for room for people of that age that you might be able to get a simulator that could work, and then they can get the full use of the pedals and the steering wheel to help them on their way. I'm hoping they're going to win a few world championships and give me my pension, but you know, that kind of thing. But they just don't know that yet. It's great to know that there's a simulator there for everyone. That would be super. Well, look, thank you very much. Stay on the line just now, but I'll round up the show for all our viewers. But for all our viewers and listeners of the Car, Sim and Race Driver Show, you've been watching myself, Hugh Hattrick, but the star of the show, without any doubt, is Josh Martin. Thank you very much, Josh, for coming on the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Excellent. I'll end the broadcast there. Heading to Orlando this year, then you need Hattrick's Orlando Holiday Guide. It's packed full of essential and crucial information to make sure you get the best from an Orlando holiday. You can get it on Kindle or iBooks, or have a copy posted out to you for just £5.50, including free delivery to UK residents. Visit hughhattrick.com now for your copy. And enjoy Orlando.